KVOE AM 1400 and 96.9 FM. Live and local presents the On Air Chat. And now, here are your hosts, Aaron Harder and Ron Thomas.
Good morning, a beautiful Wednesday morning. Welcome to the On Air Chat. We are brought to you by Bruce Davis Construction. For commercial dirt work, demolition, dirt hauling, and more, call Bruce Davis Construction, 620-342-5001. No Ron Thomas.
No Ron Thomas today.
He's down in Wichita, yep, accepting an award. And I got Chuck Samples. Good morning, Chuck.
Aaron, it is a pleasure joining you. How are you today?
I'm doing just fine. This is a good day for you since you get blamed for all the bad weather. 68 degrees last day of January.
You can't beat it. Last day of January, and then you go 69 on the first day of February. So plus more rain coming here for the weekend. So it's nice to, especially after as brutal as January was weather-wise, with all of the brutal cold. You had those temperature wind chills down near 30 below. You had, you know, probably about 5 or 6 more inches of snowfall on top
pipes
of things.
Pipes freezing.
You had
eight inch tall ice on roads.
Mm-hmm. Thank God it didn't get to that point. But yeah, the middle part of January was just bad. But this is a really nice way to go out.
It is. It's a very nice way to go out. You keep saying, I keep hearing you say, rain on the way and we really need it. That is not for the folks that live in the city. Like my yard is plenty wet. You're talking about
that
crops,
would be,
right?
That would be for crops. It would also be just in general term to get out of the – officially to get out of the drought that we are. But, you know, most of us right now here in Emporia, we are borderline either abnormally dry, which is the mildest part of the drought monitor scale, or we're out. The drought monitor's maps that they release every Thursday doesn't officially show – where the cities are. It doesn't have anything like highways or anything like that, you can tell. But really, the north half of Lyon County is clear. Southern half is abnormally dry. You have some moderate drought in portions of Morris and Chase counties right now. So basically, the rain would be needed to clear things out. But at the same time, you go out in
my
farms,
dog's,
the
my
crops.
My dog's paws beg to differ that we're in a drought.
Yeah, I would say so. And you can. I told Ron this morning that you could see the squish. You can feel the squish if you're still out there here in the middle of the week.
But it's, I think that's probably a good thing, though, that the snow and ice melted slowly.
Agreed.
And actually soaked into the ground and not much went into the sewer system.
Yeah, agreed. Look for another half an inch to an inch and a half here this weekend, and then I think it starts drying up a little bit to get us towards Valentine's Day.
There we go. Can't beat 68 and 69.
Mm-mm. Going to be out and about a lot here the next couple of days.
Yeah, we are. Let's welcome our guests. Good morning, Jamie Reaver.
Good morning. Thanks so much for having me. And Chuck, thanks for the good weather. I did not know you were solely responsible for it, and I appreciate it.
It's more of the blame.
Mm-hmm. So yes, that's why I usually get the bad half.
Yeah, that's why
it,
I like to bring up the good as well, but it's normally just the blame.
Mm-hmm. It's all good.
Jamie, how are you?
I'm good. I'm so happy to be here today and talk to you all about some of the work that I'm able to do in Emporia and throughout the state of Kansas.
I know a lot of our listeners know you. You've been in the Emporia area for a long time, but let's start out with a little bit of bio. How'd you get here and how'd you get to Kansas Appleseed?
You know, I can't believe it when I do the math and realize that I've lived in Emporia for 14 years now.
Really?
Oh my gosh, maybe 15. I think I just did some bad math. So almost 15 years. And, you know, I remember when we moved here in 2009, I'll be honest, I wasn't sure. You know, like I thought this was going to be a great community. My kids were little. And, you know, and 15 years later, I just think back to how much I love this community. And, like, I'm so glad that my husband and I were able to raise our kids here. We moved here when they were 3 and 5, and now they're 18 and 20. And it's just, and this community has been so good to them, so good to our family. So we feel really, really lucky to have been here all this time.
Where'd you come from?
So I've actually had sort of a fun travel time throughout the country. So I'm originally from Hays out in western Kansas, about the same size as Emporia. Went to college in North Texas, then went to Seattle for grad school, went to Boston for about 5 years. My husband and I lived in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. After 3 years, I decided I am not a fan of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and we thought it was time to come home and be closer to family. So we moved here. All of my family's in Kansas City. My husband's family at the time, they lived in Garden City. And so it felt right to move to Emporia and to be closer to family. And it was definitely the right choice.
What was your first gig in 09?
So I was the executive director of the United Way of the Flint Hills, did that for 10 years, loved it. And of course, my husband's taught at Emporia State the entire time we lived here.
What was it that, what was the job that you had before coming to Emporia for the United Way of the Flint Hills job?
So I was the director of development for a private school in Pennsylvania.
Okay.
So did a lot of fundraising. It's kind of funny because I've worked in education as part of my career also. And so when we lived in Seattle, I worked at an Orthodox Jewish day school. And then when we lived in Massachusetts, I worked at a Quaker school. And I remember after that, my mom said, you know, are you ever going to go back to our own faith? And maybe like, because I grew up Catholic. And she said, are you ever going to work for maybe a Catholic organization? So I think she was really proud when we lived in Pennsylvania, I worked for a Catholic school.
Oh, man. So I have to ask, because I know we're going to be talking about your time at Kansas Appleseed. We're going to drill down more for USD 253 here and your time on the board here in just a little bit. But given the other denominations that you're dealing with, was it a bit of a surprise for you looking back that you jumped into a public school board setting? And you've been involved with that here for the last several years.
You know, that's such a good question. I think what I did learn was like how much I valued working in education and how much, how important education is to every community and to every child. And so I did work at those private schools. But I think just for me, it was never about working at a private school. It was just about what education meant for everyone, because I really do believe that education is just sort of the great equalizer. And, you know, if we do our job right in whatever education setting, every kid's going to have a chance to succeed. So I was able to take all I learned, you know, working in education, and I think use that to help inform me and the work that we do on school board.
We're talking with Jamie Reaver, who is the USD 253 board president, but she's also director of Kansas Appleseed. And I wanted to back up now to your time in the United Way of the Flint Hills, directing that, and really serving as a conduit for funding and also information for the different community partners that have been in place for, you know, now what, years for the United Way across 7 to 8 counties. What was it about the job that you really enjoyed? What maybe drew you to the United Way of the Flint Hills position specifically?
You know, I really loved being in an environment where, you know, we could look at the entire community and look at every community member and think about what programs and services were needed in our community and make sure that they were able to happen. You know, Emporia has some, you know, it's tough some, you know, when I moved here especially, you know, our demographics were a little bit tougher, you know, our poverty level was higher, our, you know, really low income school district. I think at the time, I think more than 60%, if not 70% of our kids in Emporia Public Schools qualified for free or reduced lunches.
That sounds about right.
You know, it's lower now. Mm-hmm. And so there was a lot of need. And so what I loved about the United Way is that we were able to focus on the needs of our community, making sure, you know, like Food for Students offered backpacks of food for kids on the weekends. The Salvation Army could keep its cupboards full to give food to folks. But then we also funded programs that also gave hope to families, you know, and activities like Big Brothers, Big Sisters, and Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts. So many great programs. So that way you're kind of taking care of everyone. You know, you're helping people survive, but then you're also helping them get to a place where they can thrive too.
Which I think has been realized not only during your term, but previous terms as well, and Mickey's term as well, which is coming to an end soon. But I think moving to thrive and out of those levels has been a huge part of people that have been involved with lots of organizations, many of them United Way organizations.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's absolutely right. And I think that really helped with my transition to Kansas Appleseed as well. You know, when I worked at the United Way, one of the hardest things about being there is that no matter how much money we would give to the Salvation Army, and they deserved every single penny, no matter how much we'd give to, you know, Help House in Osage County, the need was never filled. You know, that the cabinets would go bare again, and then they'd have to wait for their next month's payment to be able to get more food to be able to give away. And I think after seeing that for 10 years, I realized that we can't just keep putting Band-Aids on problems. Like, we have to really search for systemic solutions. And so, like, transitioning to Kansas Appleseed really helped me do that in a different way.
Speaking of that transition to Kansas Appleseed, and really, I guess, more from the United Way, from your time in the United Way, how frustrating was it to see these community partners, you know, be able to meet needs and then be in positions where, you know, due to demand and other factors that they may have struggled at times to meet the needs that they saw.
You know, I remember when I was at the United Way, and it was probably about 2016, probably, and there was a lot of effort at the state legislature to strip away some of the safety net and to make it harder to get food assistance and cash assistance. And I remember an elected official, not a local one, but a state-level one, said something to the effect, well, we can you know, take away food assistance programs and cash assistance programs because United Ways and churches will fill the gap.
Vaguely remember that, yeah.
And that was such a painful thing to hear because, you know, when you work in social services and when you're working for an organization to support those social services and the safety net program, it was already hard enough. And so it just to know that the official government stance was going to be like United Way and churches have got it when we're already struggling to raise, you know, $500,000, $600,000 a year, that was really hard. And, you know, but we all rise to the occasion when we need to, because I think the greatest crime we can do or can commit is letting someone go hungry.
Again, we're joined here by Kansas Appleseed Director and USD 253 Board President Jamie Reaver as on their chat continues. It's 10:17 here on KVOE. I know you've been with Kansas Appleseed now for several years, but Kansas Appleseed is probably not as familiar to a lot of folks here locally as obviously the United Way and the Flint Hills is. Would it be safe to say that Kansas Appleseed dovetails with the United Way's mission on a state level, or would that not be an accurate way to describe really the Kansas Appleseed role statewide?
You know, I think that's a great way to say it, I think, on a lot of levels. You know, Kansas Appleseed really focuses on systemic change. And so we work on policy change at every level of government, you know, from school boards all the way up to Congress. We look at issues that are hurting our communities, whether it's hunger or, you know, the youth and adult justice system. And we try to make those policies better to improve the policies. And so I feel like if we do our job well and we're able to create change, it's going to make the jobs of local organizations like United Ways and Salvation Armies and child care centers a lot better and a lot easier because they know that the policies are actually working in their favor.
Speaking of that, did you find some ready partnerships, say, here locally, as you took things over here for Kansas Appleseed a few years ago?
You know, I have a board member, and he has said many times that Kansas Appleseed is the best-kept secret of Kansas. And, like, on one hand, I love that we're awesome. And but it's also really hard to hear that, you know, not a lot of people know about us. Because we do really impactful work. And, you know, and maybe that's okay, too, because there's nothing really showy and exciting about, you know, showing up to fight, you know, Kansas statute at the State House every January. But the important thing is there's organizations like Kansas Appleseed and so many of our statewide partners who are right there with us. So it might not be showy. It might not be exciting. Not a lot of people know it's happening. But the important thing is that we're doing it. You know, the things that we fight, the conversations that we have, we see wins that we can never really brag about, and we have some wins that we absolutely brag about, and it's because we're just so committed to making Kansans' lives better.
Let's talk about a few things when we come back from
Let's
our first
it.
Break. You're listening to the On Air Chat. We are brought to you by Bruce Davis Construction. This is KVOE. We are live and local.
Construction jobs don't go away when the weather gets colder. Bruce Davis Construction is available all winter long. When you need commercial dirt work from demolition to prepare for a building site or parking lot to dirt work and hauling, Bruce Davis will give you a quality job. Bruce Davis Construction, proud to be involved in recent construction jobs including the addition at Emporia High School, Emporia Travel Plaza, Glendale, and the David Trailer Zoo. Call Bruce Davis Construction at 620-342-5001.
Generating enough heat to keep you warm all winter long. KVOE, 1400 AM and 96.9 FM, live and local.
KVOE, live and local, and time now for headlines being brought to you by Bobby D's Merchant Street Barbecue. Enjoy great tasting barbecue dinner specials Monday through Saturday. Bobby D's, where it's all about the meat. from the 24-hour KVOE newsroom and a look at all the latest local headlines. Here is Chuck Samples.
Good morning, everybody. Lyon County Commissioners have a range of topics ahead for their weekly action session tomorrow. On the list is a presentation from Nesting Incorporated founder Kitty Hamilton about the new agency's goals and objectives, plus also Lyon County Emergency Communications Director Roxanne Van Gundy presenting a payment from Priority Dispatch for approval when it comes to the department's medical and fire protocols. More information at KVOE.com. Ridership up, feedback mostly positive in relation to several recent changes made by Lyon County Area Transportation. Ridership jumping about 200 riders per month between 2022 and 2023. And the Emporia Senior Center now has its biggest fundraiser back on the schedule after a nearly six-week absence as Bingo returned to the Senior Center last night, returning again on Saturdays. KVOE forecast from the TV 13 weather team, sunshine today and 68, increase in clouds tonight with a low of 46, partly sunny conditions, 69 tomorrow, cloudy Friday and 60, wet for the weekend. I'm Chuck Samples, KVOE News.
Currently, we do have a light south breeze, sunny skies, 41 degrees at KVOE, 1400 AM, 96.9 FM, all the information you need, live and local. Headlines are brought to you this hour by Bobby D's Merchant Street Barbecue. You can enjoy great-tasting barbecue dinner specials Monday through Saturday. That's Bobby D's, where it's all about the meat.
Welcome back to the On Air Chat. Chuck Samples, Aaron Harder hosting. Jamie Reber with Kansas Appleseed is our guest. Jamie, we were talking a little bit before the break about things that Kansas Appleseed does. Let's get into some specifics. What are you working on right now? Or a few things you're working on right now.
So, you know, Kansas Appleseed is a small but mighty organization. We have 10 staff members around the state, and we have such a robust agenda of work that we accomplish every single year. I don't even know how we do it, but we just have an amazing team around us. One of the things I think we're really best known for is just our mission to end hunger in our state. We deeply believe that every Kansan should have access to 3 healthy meals every single day, full stop. And I don't know why hunger is a political issue. You know, we believe that Kansas Appleseed, that it is a political choice, that when elected officials, you know, create laws time and time again that stops people from accessing food, they are making a choice about what they want for their citizens. So we work on 2 tracks when it comes to our food assistance programs. We want to make sure that the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, sort of formally known as food stamps, is accessible to everyone. We know that there's a lot of statute on the books that makes it harder for individuals to access SNAP benefits, and we would like to take some of those statutes away, repeal them, just so we can make sure that no one's going hungry. You know, I think one good example is a statute on the books that says if someone's convicted of 2 or more drug felonies, they are banned for life from receiving SNAP benefits. Now, some could say, well, you committed the crime, you know, too bad for you. But the reality is it's like double punishment.
Yeah, your life's not over just because you committed those crimes.
Right. And sometimes you could wind up with multiple felonies in one case.
Right. So here, you know, you start your time, you've done your probation, and, you know, just as you're getting released from prison, you're going to need more support than ever before to get back on your feet, to get housing, to get a job. And those things are already hard enough when you're a convicted felon. And then you throw in, we're also going to make sure you don't have food. You know, and by our estimates, we did some research, and we think that if this law were stripped from the books, that about 80 people well, let me back that up. So we know that people actually go back to prison because they have no supports on the outside. And so our estimation is about there would be about 80 people who go back to jail every year because they don't have access to food assistance programs.
Just because of the food.
Just because of the food. Mm. And do you know how much it costs to incarcerate 80 people every year in the state of Kansas?
A lot.
About $2.4 million.
For 80 people.
For 80 people. So all we're saying is let's just accept some federal dollars to give individuals food assistance programs that would probably total less than $5,000 a year for each one.
How does it compare? How does that law compare to surrounding states?
You know, states can decide what they want to do, and we are one, I can't remember the exact number, but we are alone. You know, there aren't a lot of states that are as harsh as we are. And it's so easy to change that statute, and we just have to do it. But what's so amazing is that we have a bill before the State House right now. It didn't get a hearing last year. But what we try to do more than anything at Kansas Appleseed is work with on both sides of the aisle. You know, sometimes, you know, people be like, you guys are so radical because you're trying to end hunger. I'm like, oh, I think it's the right thing to do. But, you know, we actually have a representative, Eric Smith from Burlington, who actually introduced a bill for us last session to repeal this statute. So we really do work, you know, on both sides of the aisle to advance our issues. And to know that something like that has bipartisan support makes me feel really good, because it's the righteous issue.
Is it mainly just educating the legislators on the law? Because a lot of people would hear government assistant programs and not put Representative Smith in favor of that.
True. Mm-hmm.
And to hear that he's the one that's introducing it, like you said, working on both sides of the aisle, that's got to be mm-hmm. a big bonus. But is it mostly just educating them on what's going on?
You know, I think that's exactly right. You know, helping legislators understand who's really impacted by these laws, and really how it actually harms a whole family when one person doesn't get food assistance benefits that they might need. So, you know, when you have those conversations, it really helps a lot. Sometimes we work with legislators who have a very hard line. You know, you did the crime, so we're not going to give you food. But we really try to focus on, like, when does your punishment end, and why is, you know, denying food part of that that punishment? You know, SNAP benefits are time limited. No one's going to be able to be on SNAP for the rest of their life. We're just saying, let's give them a hand up when they need it the most. It's not a lot of money. And I think, you know, that's 80 every year, that would mean 80 more people out, you know, in the workforce, 80 more people trying to rebuild their lives. You know, that's what we should be really, really fighting for.
I think a lot of people would probably say 80 people. That's not a big number. But, you know, just doing the math in my head, $2.4 million versus is like $500,000. That may be a number that resonates with a lot more people.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And, you know, and we see that a lot in our work is, you know, the administrative costs are so high on some of these policies. You know, let's just strip the policy back and, you know, just do the right thing. So, you know, we're spending more on keeping food out of people's hands than actually the food. So let's do that.
One of the other things that comes up on the justice side that I remember, and I'm not sure if this is one of the things that you wanted to touch base on, is the juvenile justice reform from the last 6 to 7 years. And I bring that up because that has not sat well with Lyon County Attorney Mark Goodman, and I'm assuming several others. But we had a chance to talk with Mike Fonkert a couple of times last year on different things, working through the 23 legislative session. And Kansas Appleseed was on board with some of the changes that have been put out there, and there are legitimate reasons as to why.
Mm-hmm. You know, we believe deeply that kids make mistakes. And, you know, we should not let a mistake they made when they were 12 or 13 or 14 years old follow them around the rest of their lives. We think that there's a lot better alternatives than to putting kids in jail, you know, instead of sending them to Topeka to the youth, you know, justice system. We can and should do better for kids. You know, we have a bill right now that was just introduced last week in both chambers, in the House and Senate, that would eliminate the assessing fines and fees to all kids when they interact with the youth justice system. That is another bill that has strong bipartisan support. You know, on the Senate side, it was introduced by the Senate Judiciary Committee, and, you know, they want to see some change because they know that there's no good comes from saying to a kid that, you know, made some mistakes, that they are going to turn 18 and they're going to have $20,000 in fines and fees from something that they did when they were 12 or 13. We think there are better alternatives. We do believe that if a child has damaged property, they should absolutely pay restitution. And we also think that there should be some punishment. Maybe it should be, you know, going to therapy. Maybe it's community service. Maybe it's restorative justice. But there's a lot better ways to work with kids. So what they did in a single moment of time doesn't follow them around the rest of their lives. You know, we worked with a young man who's part of our Debt-Free Justice Coalition. And he committed some crimes, never went to jail for it. You know, he, you know, had probation, did all the things he was supposed to, had to keep showing up for, you know, lab tests and checking in with his probation officer. And then he moved to Ohio. And then he had fines and fees. Maybe he was aware of it. I'm not sure. Probably was aware of it, but wasn't paying them. You know, he was then forced to come back to Kansas to work out a payment plan for his fines and fees. He couldn't because he lost his job when he got arrested in Ohio. And he was put in jail for not being able to pay his fines and fees. And he was never put in jail for his crime. So it just doesn't really make sense that fines and fees that, you know, fund the court system are being put on the backs of kids who have really so little say in what's happening to them.
1031 here on KVUE and KVUE.com as the on-air chat continues. Maybe you can talk a little bit more about that Debt-Free Justice Coalition and kind of get us into that side of things for Kansas Appleseed.
Mm-hmm. So we belong to a coalition with a lot of other state and national partners. You know, the ACLU of Kansas, Kansas Action for Children, the Galt Center, And what we're working on collectively is to do what so many other states are doing. Right now, there are, I believe, 25 other states that do not assess fines and fees for kids when they interact with the justice system. Now, you know, we have to remember what fines and fees are. So fines is the payment you make when you commit a crime. And the fees are all the costs associated with a court system. So, you know, your docking fee, your lab test, your booking fee. And so we're working together collectively to really end that practice. You know, we know that, you know, we've done a lot of research and our partners have done a lot of research. But what we know is that the cost of actually trying to collect fines and fees from kids and their families, and many of them are low, like at some point, well-resourced families are going to be able to pay their kids fines and fees. So when we talk about collecting fines and fees, we are really talking about low-income families who have no money in savings, who, you know, I think the average household income in 2020 was like just over $20,000. So they're already like poor families.
Really tight financially.
And so then they're all having to deal with, you know, what their kid had done, which is always really hard. And then we want them to pay all of these fines and fees. You know, I talked to this one young man who had a trial in Wyandotte County, wanted his transcript fees, $1,400. Another young man got picked up in Oklahoma City, brought back to Wichita, $800. And, like, these are definitely expenses for the court system and everything. But we keep putting these fines on kids, and they can't pay them. And, you know, we argue that it takes more work and more resources to collect the fines and fees than what counties are actually collecting. In 2020, Wyandotte County only collected $14,000 in fines and fees. And I would argue they spent a lot more trying to collect those fines and fees.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. Talk about shackling that goes along with
youth shackling
with that.
Mm-hmm. So this is, you know, I think this should be an easy bill, but I should knock on wood because every time we think something should be like a slam dunk, it never is.
Mm-hmm.
But this. We have an interesting practice in Kansas right now. So when a child makes a court appearance, it is up to their jailer to decide if they should be shackled when they go to court. Shackles can weigh up to 25 pounds, so pretty heavy. So imagine a 13, 14-year-old kid, you know, going to a court and being shackled.
This is handcuffs and chains.
Handcuffs, right. Yeah, handcuffs, chain going down to the ankles. And so what we find outrageous is the Supreme Court has already ruled on adult shackling, and they have said that you can only shackle adults if you have reason to worry about safety. There are no presumptions when it comes to kids. And so we just want equal law. If we already have a Supreme Court ruling that said that adults can't be shackled, why do we still allow it for kids? And so we want that to be removed for
because
kids.
Only because they haven't ruled on it yet.
Just because they haven't ruled on it.
Right.
Which baffles me that they wouldn't make the ruling for all human beings. But
right. You know, in Texas, actually, they ruled and they have a law in the books now that even in Texas, they can't shackle kids. Again, you know, we believe everyone should, if they've committed a crime, they should go to the court system. They know what they need to do. But we should not keep, you know, punishing kids over and over again.
Another topic here for Kansas Appleseed, and it's one that's gotten last couple of years a fair amount of attention, is the state's issues with foster care. And having been a foster parent and considering whether to jump back into the foster parent role, some of the stats that came out over the last year to 18 months in the foster care system as to number of kids that are in placement, number of kids who unfortunately have to sleep overnights and sometimes multiple overnights in state facilities because there's not enough foster parents and there's really hasn't been an effort to re-engage foster parents at the state level, to me personally, is just mind-boggling and not in a good way. So Kansas Appleseed has been working for a number of years to really make things a little better here for at least the foster care system. And I guess my question for you, Jamie, with that preface is, after the agreement was reached here about a year ago, and I don't have all the details in front of me, otherwise I'd start spitting them out, how is the state doing from Kansas Appleseed's perspective on getting the foster care system where it needs to be?
We have a long way to go, Chuck. You know, Kansas Appleseed filed a lawsuit against the state of Kansas in 2018 about the treatment of kids in the foster care system. And our issues were that on two areas. One was the lack of mental health screenings that kids were getting, required mental health screenings that kids weren't getting when they were entering foster care, and then also the unstable placement rates. So our research showed us, and a lot of conversations we had showed that kids were being moved, you know, 20, 30, sometimes, you know, up to 100 times a year. And, you know, when kids, you know, have to go into foster care, we know it's already traumatic enough for them. And then to...
Yeah, just not the first one. Yeah, just... Let alone once you get to 60, 70, 95, whatever
absolutely.
Number you're
absolutely. And so, you know, the state, you know, has a moral, ethical, legal obligation to give these children the best care possible. And, you know, they fail to do so time and time again. You know, Kansas's foster care system is the most privatized system in the entire country.
And we've been
privatized. I think we started to privatize in the late 90s, maybe early 2000s, because of a different lawsuit that was filed. And our foster care system should not be forced, it shouldn't only change because of lawsuits. You know, I think that we have to make sure that we're investing in the foster care system. I do appreciate that the legislature is really shining a light on the foster care system and asking all of the hard questions. You know, every time, you know, a traumatic story comes out in the news about how the system has failed another kid, you know, our heart just it breaks because we know, you know, these are things that we have seen for years. And when are we as a society going to say this is enough? We have to do better for kids. You know, we know that in 2022, the Office of the Child Advocate or the Division of the Child Advocate did a survey of former foster parents, and they said about 500 foster families had exited the system for lack of support. That is way too many. You know, we have about 6,000 to 7,000 kids currently in the foster care system. Those 500 homes are very much needed, you know, in our state. We've got to make sure that kids are being well taken care of. And I think what has really galled me through the years is that, you know, parents have lost their kids due to neglect for a lot of different reasons. You know, we would argue that the safety net reforms of 2015, 2016 really exacerbated the foster care problem, and more kids were getting removed due to neglect because of the stripping away of food assistance and cash assistance programs. And we had a system that wasn't equipped to handle it. But when, you know, when kids are being removed from neglect, I look at what the state has done and I'm thinking, you can't give them stable housing. You're not giving kids adequate access to mental health screenings. The high school graduation rate for kids in the foster care system at one point was about 45 to 50%. That's neglect. And our state has to do better for kids. And I'm so proud that we are part of this lawsuit, that we continue to monitor it. We had our year two report released in the fall. We were monitoring them for 4 years. And we'll keep monitoring them until, you know, we see all of the practice improvements. You know, it's heartbreaking because we know that this system moves so slowly, but these kids don't have time. I mean, we're losing kids now because, you know, it's going to take another couple of years to really see the change that we need. It's the slowness of it all is just the most frustrating.
And being a foster parent, a past foster parent again, the thing that I see with the system is not just what we've talked about here with the emergency placements and things like that, but it does seem like the system is generated and geared more towards helping the younger foster kids because, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it doesn't seem like there's the same amount of emphasis points for those, specifically teenagers, and especially once you get, you know, later stages of high school, if you go into the foster care system, it doesn't seem like there's really a whole lot of emphasis on getting them into maybe some adoption-based services or basically just helping them to transition out of the foster care system well, at least to let them land gently as they get out of the foster care system.
You know, that's such a good point, you know, and the reason, you know, when I think about the high school graduation for kids in the foster care system, we know that if kids don't have a high school degree, you know, that their chances of living in poverty are so much greater. And so we've talked a lot about what supports can be offered to kids as they start to age out from the system. And so just last week, we testified with some of our partners and some former foster youth on a bill that's it's called the Soul Family Program. And this program would provide legal guardianships for kids who are aging out of the system because we see too many kids, you know, who are in high school. They're not going to be adopted, unfortunately. And they don't have the tools they need to enter the world. They don't have their driver's license. They don't know how to apply for a job. And so we believe that we need to create a permanency option for those kids so that way they have the supports that they need. So we had a great hearing in front of a legislative committee last week. The young people spoke about how, you know, they felt abandoned by the system and what it would have meant for them to have, you know, some sort of legal guardianship for them as they exited the system. And it was well received by the committee. So we're feeling pretty optimistic that we will be able to, you know, formalize some supports for older kids.
You talked about driver's license and suspension of driver license is another big topic on Kansas Appleseed. Speak mm-hmm. on that a little.
Yes. Yeah, so we're working on a bill that would stop the practice of suspending driver's license for failure to pay fines and fees. Our research shows over 125,000 Kansans had their driver's license suspended due to unpaid fines and fees. And, you know, we're not saying people shouldn't pay their fines and fees. Like, we think that if you
Hard to pay a fine and a fee if you don't have a job.
Exactly. Yeah. That's exactly right. So, you know, if you lose your driver's license and you can't drive to work, and, you know, we're in Kansas, and not every Kansas community has public transportation. And we live in, there's a lot of rural communities where your job might be 20 miles from your home. So if you can't get in the car to drive to work, how are you supposed to make money to pay your fines and fees? So ultimately, we want to stop the practice of suspending driver's license for failure to pay. We think some other options should exist, payment plans. You know, not every court system offers the payment plan. We would love to see that happen. You know, if someone knew that if they had $1,000 in fines and they could, you know, pay $25 a week to chip away at it, then I think that the court system would probably end up getting more money that way instead of this all-in approach. You know, we talked to one young man who had a couple of $1,000. He knew he had messed up. He was going to pay it. So he went to the court system and said, okay, can I set up a payment plan? And they said, nope, we want it all right now. And it was just beyond his reach. It's beyond most people's reach. You know, I think the research shows that only about 40% of American families have $400 or more in savings right now. And, you know, again, people make mistakes. For whatever reason, you know, someone lost their driver's license. And let's just stop being punitive and help them move forward instead of constantly holding them back. We see it over and over again in our work, and we just, you know, we just believe so much better for people. We want people to have what they need to survive and thrive and be successful, but we keep challenging these laws that make it harder and harder for people. I mean, we should want more for each other, and we see policies that just do the opposite.
I'll tell you this before we take our final break here on the on-air chat. Jamie, your demeanor changed a little bit during that segment because the pride in your work that was kind of evident in the first, you know, couple of minutes, you're now looking at the challenges ahead and mm-hmm. there's a little bit of frustration in your face, but there's also a little bit of determination that I see too, that the work obviously is not done and Kansas Appleseed will push forward.
Absolutely. You know, I talked to someone last year and he asked me, it's like, you deal with these really hard topics. Like, does it just keep you up at night worrying about hunger and the youth justice system? And, you know, and I'll be honest, it doesn't, because at the end of the day, like, I get to be in the fight. I get to be a part of finding a solution, and that gives me a lot of hope. So when we were able to work with legislators and other policymakers on these issues and find an ally and a partner where we least expected it, you know, just like on our youth justice work, there are some really conservative think tanks in this country who support that legislation. And, you know, it, that gives me a lot of hope that if we can just sort of cut through the noise, work together, we're going to make some really good change. So, yeah, I do get frustrated, maybe a little passionate, but
hey, the passion's fine.
But, you know, because I see, like, we are so close to being successful.
Let's take our second break here on the on-air chat. Jamie Reber is our guest. We'll come back and talk a little bit about USD 253. You're listening to the on-air chat on KVOE. We are live and local.
Construction jobs don't go away when the weather gets colder. Bruce Davis Construction is available all winter long. When you need commercial dirt work, from demolition to prepare for a building site or parking lot to dirt work and hauling, Bruce Davis will give you a quality job. Bruce Davis Construction, proud to be involved in recent construction jobs, including the addition at Emporia High School, Emporia Travel Plaza, Glendale, and the David Trailer Zoo. Call Bruce Davis Construction at 620-342-5001.
All winter long, we are the hot spot on your radio. KVOE 1400 AM and 96.9 FM, live and local.
KVOE live and local, and time now for a look at sports headlines, being brought to you by Thurston's Plus Auto Body and Automotive. Call 620-342-2613 when your car needs help. You don't have to go where anyone tells you, go where you want. Now from the 24-hour KVOE newsroom, and a look at all the sports you need, here is Blake Cripps.
Well, a couple of easy wins last night for the Emporia High basketball teams, a sweep of the Trojans in a makeup doubleheader. Emporia High boys won their second straight 56-37 against the Trojans, game tied on two separate occasions early before the Spartans took control, never gave it back. They led by 14 going into the fourth quarter, a career-high 24 points from Cooper Reck to lead the Spartans. Meanwhile, the number 5 Emporia High Lady Spartans improved to 11-1 on the season, 3-0 in the Centennial League after blasting the Trojans 63-30, a career-high 30 points from Addie Kermer, pacing EHS on the way to their ninth consecutive win. Kansas State men's basketball team got shut down in the first half. They lost by 20, 73-53 against Oklahoma last night. OU led 35-19 at the half. They held the Cats to 6-for-26 shooting in the first half, just 2-for-14 shooting from the three-point line in the first half. Tyler Perry, the only Wildcat in double figures with 23 points. Eighth-ranked Kansas played without Kevin McCuller. He missed the game with a shoulder injury. That wasn't nearly enough to make the game competitive, as the Jayhawks smothered Oklahoma State 83-54 at Allen Fieldhouse last night. 5 Jayhawks in double figures. KU built a 44-26 lead at the half, and OSU never challenged in the second. KJ Adams, Hunter Dickinson each led the way with 16 points. Dickinson grabbed 11 rebounds for a double-double. That's sports. From the KVOE Sports Desk, I'm Blake Cripps.
Thank you, Blake. Sports headlines brought to you today by Thurston's Plus Auto Body and Automotive at 708 Lantern Lane. Information available in the Yellow Book and on the web at thurstonsplusautobody.com.
Welcome back to the on-air chat. Chuck Samples, Aaron Harder hosting, Jamie Reber with Kansas Appleseed, the director of Kansas Appleseed, and the USD 253 board president. Let's get into some USD 253. You want to?
I would love to.
Okay. What made you run for school board?
You know, I'm going to take you back to 2021. Things were a little bit tricky.
A little crazy.
You know, a little crazy. And I'd always wanted to run for school board, but I never really felt like it was would be a good decision. Would feel a little bit like a conflict with my work at United Way, just because, you know, doing all the fundraising and really wanted to stay focused on that. And then in 2019, I kind of thought about it a little bit and thought, no, I'm just starting a new job, too busy. And then 2021, someone kept texting me and asking me if I would think about running for school board. And I said no about a million times. And then
a million one,
and then million and one. I was like, yes,
couldn't do it.
Yeah. And, you know, I ran because the conversation was so much about COVID. And the conversation was so much about, it was kind of an anti-public education vibe at the time. And I really just was worried that we were focusing so much more on masks than we were on math and reading. And I was really worried that, you know, we were going to lose a whole generation of kids if we didn't focus on, you know, catching up from all of that learning loss. And so I decided to throw my hat in the ring. Running for office is the most nerve-wracking thing ever. And I think that every time I saw one of my yard signs, I got a little sick to my stomach. I don't know if you can relate to that at all, Aaron, but it's very nerve-wracking to do that. So I was just so grateful when I was elected. And I think anyone who runs just should be commended.
It feels more like judging than being elected.
That is a perfect way. Yeah. So let's just, instead of calling it elections, we'll call it the judgment.
Personal judgment.
Yes.
But the flip side of that is it's very reassuring when the election does happen and it goes in your favor.
Right. Absolutely. You know, and you never know. You never know how an election is going to go. And so I felt good because I was honest about what I wanted and what I was concerned about and why, you know, not all the issues. And some days I thought, boy, maybe I messed up and I shouldn't have said that, but people still voted for me. And for that, I'm really grateful. And throughout my time in school board, and it's just been over 2 years now, I've really tried to continue to think about what I set out to do and to work towards, you know, fulfilling that every time I do anything related to school board.
Speaking of school board and the desire to be on the school board, did anything in your career really prepare you for the amount of work that goes into being a well-prepared board member?
No, it is shocking how much, you know, you have to know about being on school board and being, you know, and sitting in that seat. You know, I have a full-time job. I have two kids, you know, just like many of my other, you know, fellow school board members. Some days school board feels like a full-time job.
By itself.
Just the amount of meetings that we go to, but also not just the meetings, but the other work you want to do. You know, you want to know what's happening in our budget. And our budget notebook is like 2 inches thick, you know, so you do really spend a lot of time reading that. You want to talk to as many people as you can. You know, yesterday I was so excited because I was able to go and do a tour of William Allen Y, and they had a fun pep assembly. And so not just doing like the administrative stuff, but also being present in the schools as well and seeing them, going to the basketball games, going to the plays. You know, it is a time commitment. And I mean, I love it. I mean, if it could just all be basketball games and pep rallies, it would be the best job ever. But so, you know, if you take your role seriously, you're going to do all of those things. And we should do all of those things. But man, some days I think I do more school board than maybe my job, and I hope my boss isn't listening.
My bosses are listening, and they know it's the same way. I get asked all the time, how much do you average? Do you spend on city commissions? I don't know. If something needs done, I just do it. Some weeks, you know, it could be 20 hours getting ready for next week's meeting or prepping for something we're going to vote on. You know, knowing we're going to vote on it in April maybe, and some weeks it's, hey, This is pretty simple, and somebody prepared me on this topic a couple months ago, and now we're finally voting on it. I don't have to spend that much time, but it is a commitment, and if you want to do it right, you just got to jump all in.
You do it.
Hats off to our bosses for letting us do it.
Absolutely. The thing that I find the most comical sometimes is I think I'm so prepared on like 90% of the issues, and then there's one I'm like, oh, that's a small issue, that's not going to be a big deal, and becomes such
that's
a
the one.
And that's the one, like, oh. So it's kind of funny how, you know, you can never predict the workload, you can never predict what other board members might say about a topic, so you have to, like, when you're doing all of your homework and preparing, you have to think at every angle of a topic so that way you can be as prepared as possible.
Speaking of, you know, the board as a whole, and referencing the point that you made here about the sentiment a couple of years ago when we were at the peak of COVID, students had come out of the classroom, questions coming up as to, you know, when to bring students back in, how that was going to work out, and the anti-public education sentiment that you had noted, and I think a lot of people had noted at that time. has that eased? Or are we still, is that a significant undercurrent here at this point in time when it comes to public education and the board meetings?
And a quick follow-up, and is that still just the adult issue and has nothing to do with the actual kids?
Mm-hmm. Oh, all good questions. So I think in our community, it is eased. I think that, you know, everyone in our communities knows the value of public education. They want what's best for our kids. And the attacks on teachers that we are seeing in 2020 and 2021 have really subsided. So I feel a lot more community support for our schools, and that's the way it should be. You know, every single day, our teachers and staff and administration are doing amazing things for kids. And when I get to go into the schools, kids are happy. So I think sometimes it's the adult stuff that gets in the way of everything. But I think what I do see still, and I think it's probably because of my work at Kansas Appleseed, I still see a legislature that doesn't want to trust what's happening in our schools. And that is really disappointing to see bill after bill introduced that's trying to take away the power and the authority of school boards. You know, last year we had a lot of conversation about a bill that would not allow school boards to sell property. That, you know, when we were trying to sell Maynard, right. And there's statute on the books that the state has right of first refusal on any school district property. And so that caused a lot of confusion because we were kind of like the test case on what to do. So we are trying to figure out where we were, you know, in the bounds of the law, what the attorney general's ruling was. A school district should just go to sell the property that it needs to sell to carry out its business. You know, Maynard had been empty for a while. When we sell a building, we just put the money right back into our school district. You know, that money is now going to be used to replace the high school roof. Why is there just this distrust of school boards coming down from our Kansas legislature? I was just reading about a new bill that was introduced yesterday that would also put some more requirements on the school board agenda and, you know, requiring certain things. And, like, we already have public comment, but now there could be, there's going to be possible statute of letting a school board member add an item under new business to a school board agenda during the meeting. You know, we are a well-oiled school board here in Emporia. We know how to run a meeting. We know how to set our agenda.
As many are.
And every single one of our board members knows exactly how to get an item on the agenda. We don't need the Kansas legislature telling us how to do that. And so it's really frustrating that we are duly elected officials and yet another body is trying to tell us how to run our school board. I think we're doing a really good job already. It's, you know, they need to trust us.
Well, no one knows better than the actual school board members that are in their own towns and yep. not sitting in Topeka. So that,
right.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
As far as Chuck's question on if things have changed quite a bit, and it really helped for parents to understand how hard it is to educate your children.
Mm-hmm.
Did it not?
Oh, yeah. You know, I remember when we were all home, you know, on the longest spring break ever in 2020. And
that's one way to look at it.
Yeah. And just trying to, you know, listening to our teachers, trying to keep that positive attitude and supporting the kids. It was just so inspiring to be able to sit outside my kids' bedroom doors and hear them on the computers with their teachers. Because more than anything we know, we learned from that time, is that school is just not math and reading. Those are some of the most important reasons why we send kids to school, and our schools are doing a really great job educating kids. But there's also the social emotional support we give kids. There's
no offense to us as parents, but the teachers raise our kids as much as we do, if not more.
When they're going in that way for a long time.
You know, schools are a source of breakfast, lunch, and a snack. You know, kids know that they have a lot of trusted adults around them, and so you know we know
it's
we,
breakfast, snack, lunch. Snack.
Yeah. Transport to and from.
I support that 100%. So, you know, we know that how important our schools are. You know, we know that schools aren't just 8-to-3 operations. We know there has to be before school. We know there has to be after school. And I just, you know, and yet every single year there's like conversations about, you know, are we doing right for the kids? And we should be having those conversations every single year. But we're forgetting that we have been educating kids in every community for centuries. And I look at the three of us right now and I feel like we went to public education and look at us. We did pretty good. You know, I believe deeply in public education. I believe
Chuck's was even in Nebraska.
Oh, I know. That's pretty crazy.
I forgot
wasn't
about
it?
That. So yeah, I just think that, you know, public education is the promise we make to the next generation. And it served me well and it served you all well. And so let's just keep letting teachers and administrators do the jobs that they've been doing so well for so long.
Got a couple of things that I wanted to ask, one of which is on our topic, one of which actually loops back here to Kansas Appleseed before we wrap up. What are you seeing right now, district-wide specifically, challenges over the last couple of years that are being met and some challenges that still remain, whether they're kind of, you know, just in general terms because it's education or maybe some specific stuff that still needs to be yet resolved here for the district?
You know, when I first joined school board, one of the biggest things we talked about was hiring. Every school district everywhere was just having a hard time hiring teachers. And I really feel like that has eased up a lot. I was really happy at a board meeting in November. We already had on our agenda to approve the hiring of 5 new teachers for next year. That was unheard of for us to be offering jobs to folks in November for next year. So our human resources department has really, you know, gone above and beyond to on recruiting. I also think that our teachers and staff have really, they're also huge recruiters, and I think they've been helping recruit as well. So I think that makes a big difference. You know, when I was at William Allen White yesterday, I met a new teacher who was just hired in January. So, you know, we're even making, you know, mid-year appointments to fill some of those spots as well. I think that we also, you know, we are making gains on our academic outcomes. You know, our last state assessments, you know, we've seen some good rebound from the COVID learning loss. I would actually like to ban the term COVID learning loss going forward, because I feel like we're a little bit away from that now. And we just have to keep, you know, plugging ahead and making sure our kids have, you know, everything they need to succeed. And then, you know, I think that also knowing that kids are still struggling and our community still has, you know, some low-income families. And, like, one of the things I was most proud of was when we passed a motion last year to subsidize reduced-price meals. So if a family received reduced-price meals, that the school district would just subsidize it so they would get free meals. I really believe that if kids are coming to school hungry, it's going to impact their ability to do the schoolwork that they need to do. I also know that we talk about behavior issues. I think something like that will also curb behavior issues. So I think we just have to keep thinking about all the different ways we support kids academically and not academically.
You've said William Allen White a couple of times relating to pep rallies and the fun things, but it's also fun because that's the last project of the bond issue, is it not?
It is.
I know. And I am on the Building Futures Executive Committee. And so I get to sit at the table while they show us the plans. And it's just so exciting to know that we are that close to being done. You know, Mr. Tell gave us a tour of the school yesterday. So we were talking about where the new addition is going to go, which classrooms are going to be moved. And so I'm really excited for them. It is an older school. And so I think that there are some of the upgrades we're doing will just enhance their learning space so much more. And they deserve it. I'm excited. I cannot believe we're this close to being done.
Outstanding.
It seems like the projects took forever, did it not? And we're almost done.
I feel like they built us a whole new middle school.
That's a big addition.
Yeah, it was a big addition. And one day we were at a school board meeting and we were looking at pictures of the new gym and the new concession stand area. And there were some high school students in the audience. And I think they may have been extremely jealous when they saw the beauty of that new addition at the middle school.
Now, before we wrap things up, you're heading off to Washington, D.C. here and fairly soon here for your Kansas Appleseed work.
I am. I was really excited and honored to be invited to go to a summit at the White House on February 22nd. And so they've asked some community leaders from Kansas, Oklahoma, and Missouri to just go and talk to administration officials about what's happening on the ground and in the community. So this is definitely going to be a time when I'm going to wear both my Appleseed hat and my USD 253 hat to be able to talk to them about what's important to us in Kansas, share our successes, but also some of the challenges we're facing. So really, really honored to be able to do that. I may have almost cried when I got the invitation, to be honest.
That's perfectly fine. That's going back to your passion then.
There you go. There you go. Jamie, thanks so much for joining us here today. Best of luck here on the school board. I know you got a meeting here probably was just a few days from now. And best of luck with your ongoing work with Kansas Appleseed, too.
Thank you.
Keep us posted.
Thank you. And we would love for anyone who's listening to learn more about Kansas Appleseed by going to our website, www.kansasappleseed.org. We're working on a lot of amazing issues.
Thanks for joining us. Thanks for listening to the On Air Chat. We've been brought to you by Bruce Davis Construction for commercial dirt work, demolition, dirt hauling, and more. Call Bruce Davis Construction, 620-342-5001. Thanks for Chuck for helping me host. We'll be back next week. Right here on KVOE AM 1400 and 96.9 FM, we are live and local.
Since 1939, news, weather, and sports. KVOE 1400 AM Emporia, 96.9 FM, K245 BQ Emporia.